Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 423 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. Here at the Unpopular Podcast, now let me ask you to agree with me. I'm asking you to hear me out. I feel like I'm going to have this caveat throughout the next few episodes, but I record the day before you guys hear it. So I record, you guys hear it on Wednesday and Saturday. I record Tuesday and Friday, and when I'm recording is mid-afternoon before the night games. So I'm not going to talk about, I don't know the outcome of the games. I will talk about it next episode. What I'm going to talk about on these episodes is what we've already seen. And with every playoff series comes evaluation. It's good for you to evaluate exactly where your team is. And for some teams, they're a lot further than they want to be. And for other teams, they're not as far as you think. That is kind of where the Clippers and Mavericks sit. Now, obviously, again, I have not seen game one of the Mavericks Thunder series, but both of these teams, I would say halfway through the season, both of these teams had two completely different looks, and both of these teams had two completely different ideas about themselves. Now, yes, every team hopes to be in contention for a championship. And when you have players as good as Luka Doncic, when you have players as good as Kyrie Irving, you hope to be in that championship conversation. But there was a little less certainty about the Dallas Mavericks competing for a championship than there was the LA Clippers. When you get a Kawhi Leonard, or when you have Kawhi Leonard, I'm sorry, when you have Paul George, when you get a James Harden, when you have Russell Westbrook, you know what all four of them have in common? They will be eventually in the Hall of Fame. I don't care what people feel about Paul George. I know that there's some people that love Paul George, some people that hate Paul George. Hey, you have the right to feel how you feel. But if we're talking subjectively, Paul George will be, he is good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. When you have four Hall of Famers, your expectation for yourself should be high. They don't go get James Harden from Philly if they didn't think that he would be the piece, or he could be the piece that unlocks a team that up to this point has not reached the goals that they hope to have reached with the type of players that they have. Well, as we sit here today, one team, the Dallas Mavericks, would have just played the Oklahoma City Thunder, who was the number one overall seed in the West. They would have played them in game one of the second round. And another team, the other team, the LA Clippers, are in the re-evaluation process at home. The question is, when do you decide to break something up? When should a team that has as many pieces as they have, when should they decide to break it up? If they should decide to break it up. That is the reevaluation process that is taking place. What should we do next? Because I'm almost sure that the brass that call themselves the higher-ups for the Clippers did not expect to be here, did not expect to be watching the playoffs the same way fans are watching the playoffs in round two. I do think it's extremely interesting that three teams that we kind of touted as the next best teams, or the quote-unquote super teams, that is the Oklahoma City, that is the Phoenix Suns, that's the Milwaukee Bucks, and this Clippers team, all of them did not even touch the second round. Decisions need to be made. Decisions are going to be made. One of the reasons why I said that it's going to be a very bleak, it's going to be a very nasty future for this current Suns team is because you spend that much money on your top three players, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker. You spend all that money on them, meaning that you have to gut pretty much your entire team for those three players. And you hope that those three players, because you spent so much money, will take you to the promised land. Not only did they not do that, they didn't even win you a game. So now you pretty much gambled with your future, giving up as many picks as you gave up for Kevin Durant and for Bradley Beal. And now you have no picks for the foreseeable future. And you have three very expensive players that do the same exact thing. Their skill sets are extremely redundant. So you're not really building a team. You're building a rec center team. You're building a team that you would pick up at the park and just figure it out. Well, those teams are fun when they're fun, but those teams aren't championship teams. I'm not going to lie and say that I had high hopes for the Clippers this year. I am one of those people. Call me naive, call me stupid, call me what you want. I'm one of those people that do not bank on injuries. I'm one of those people that have, I guess, the optimism that a player is going to be able to play. Yes, I do acknowledge that some players have a more extensive history of injury, but I do hope and I do bank on the fact, outside of maybe Ben Simmons. I know he just caught a stray, but I never really expect Ben Simmons to be healthy because he hasn't been since Philly. I understand how important, and I've said this on this podcast for the last few episodes now, I understand how important your best player is to a team success. It's almost unheard of that a team that does not have their best player due to injury makes a extensive run in the playoffs. The Clippers is probably the only team that you could, the expectations should be a little different for them, because they have, even with Kawhi Leonard being out, they have three Hall of Famers, and they have an incredible coach in Ty Lue, and they have a well-built team. Whether you talk about Zubac, whether you talk about Norman Powell, whether you talk about Mason Plumlee, whether you talk about Coffee, Terrence Mann, they have a good team. And what's different from them in the Suns outside of the team construction, their stars aren't redundant. Meaning, while yes, they do similar things, they can also do different things. Which is why, to me, this loss is so baffling. I give all the credit to, obviously, the Mavericks for overcoming, you know, the Clippers. And you looked in that series, and this team, which is the Dallas Mavericks, feeds so heavily off of the play of Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They don't really have another player that can really go get their own, that can really put the ball on their brown and get their shot. Almost everything runs through both Luka or Kyrie Irving. And I will say that defensively, they were incredible with Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively. They were great. Even Luka, who I have even lamented his defense could be better, Luka was incredible in this series. So in all respects, the Dallas Mavericks won this series. I mean, hell, they won 4-2. So it ain't like it wasn't as close as you think. It wasn't. It was. I know it was six games instead of seven, but this is a very, I'll say, tough time for the evaluation period for the Clippers. Because one thing about the evaluation period, it is always going to come, but sometimes it comes sooner than you expect. And I'm almost sure that the Clippers, especially when they got James Harden, did not expect to be out round one. And I even said before this series, it would be very hard for me to look up next season and see this team fully intact, because you have to ask yourself, what is the ceiling? I think that's the hardest part about the reevaluation period. You thought, the team thought, that the ceiling was different than what it really is. When you have four Hall of Famers, you would think that the ceiling is NBA championship. You go into it as, like, you know how I say that every team has different expectations coming into the seasons? When you have four Hall of Famers suited up, you would think that the expectation is championship. Having two Hall of Famers, having one Hall of Famer, hell, why do you think that there's still people that have not given up on the Golden State Warriors, even with how bad they look these last 2 years? Because they have an all-time player in Steph Curry. And it's very hard to give up on a player that, or a future Hall of Famer, an all-time player. The Clippers thought that they have four of them. And they can't make it out the first round. So obviously the ceiling that we thought, that they thought was championship, obviously is not that. No one wants to talk about it. But it's true. And it has to be talked about. At this point of his career, we are leaning back more than we're looking forward when talking about Kawhi Leonard. This is yet another year where Kawhi Leonard is not available in the most important time for his team, and that is the playoffs. He played two games, I think. And both games they lost because of how much time he missed. Now, I am not saying that Kawhi Leonard is not hurt. I'm not saying that he's faking injury. I'm not saying any of that. What I am saying is, I think that this Clippers experiment with Kawhi Leonard being your best player, this experiment, this case study has shown that I think that the Toronto Raptors year was more of an anomaly than the norm. Now, yes, I am one of those people that think if Golden State was completely healthy in the finals, they would have won. But it is what it is. But I don't think Kawhi Leonard, because of his extensive injury history at this point, I don't think Kawhi Leonard can be your best player and you still have championship aspirations. He maybe could have. And I understand, again, what happened with the Toronto Raptors. But mind you, remember that road. Game seven. There's no doubt in my mind that Kawhi Leonard is a great player when healthy. There's no doubt in my mind that Kawhi Leonard can be the best player on a championship caliber team. We have seen it. But we've also seen more times than we've seen the latter or the former is Kawhi Leonard not be available for his team in the biggest moments. So now you're putting pressure on players that are good enough to hold that pressure, i.e. Paul George, but has already come out and said that he's fine taking a second option role. So that that case, there's no way that Paul George could be your best player. Hell, we've even seen Paul George be the best player on a team. And while he was good in Indiana, there was an obvious ceiling. And that ceiling was LeBron James in the Eastern Conference Finals going against Miami. I'm not saying that. I mean, I know Kawhi Leonard just signed the extension, so I'm not saying Kawhi Leonard is going to be gone. But it's very hard for me to see Paul George on this team starting next year. And I'm very interested to see what happens with James Harden, because both of them and Russell Westbrook. Because, again, at some point you have to be honest about what we're seeing. And at some point you have to be honest with yourself. I understand that you may think your ceiling is here. And in all honesty, your ceiling should be here. But when you look at what you've produced, your ceiling is where it is. And this is yet another season where you're asking more questions than receiving answers. Again, I don't think people understand how monumental of a collapse this was for the Clippers, the Suns, and the Bucks. I understand the Bucks mostly because of injury, even though I didn't think that the Bucks were good enough after, you know, everything that we've seen. I didn't think they were good enough to win a championship. But there was so much high hopes for the Clippers for a lot of reasons. And now, you can't, you're sitting at home watching the Dallas Mavericks advance. And shouts out to the Mavericks, man. I don't want to poo-poo on them. I don't want to say that it's just it's just a Clippers failure. The Mavericks did their thing. Then you were getting help from a lot of areas, man. Again, Daniel Gafford. I'm sorry. It was. And the two best players of the series, the two most consistent players of the series, was Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. So I'm interested to see what happens with the Thunder. I think that the Dallas Mavericks have a really good shot of beating the Thunder. And I also think that the Thunder they can, obviously being the number one seed, they can run with anybody. So, yeah, man, that's going to be an interesting series. And I understand that I'm not talking about game one because it hasn't happened. I'll talk about that or talk about what we've seen or what we will see moving forward in probably next episode. So, but yeah, let's move forward. This Cavaliers Magic series told me more about both the Magic and the Cavaliers than you expect, than probably they expect. And I know it's going to sound crazy, and it might even sound a little bit contradicting compared to what I just said, but I feel better about the team that lost more than the team that won in this series. I feel better about where the Magic are compared to where the Cavaliers are. And I know it's crazy because the Cavaliers have obviously won the series against the Magic. Exactly my fears. Wait, let me say it like this. The fears that I had about the Thunder, about the Timberwolves, were the same exact fears I had for the Magic. And the Magic, you see, the Magic is a perfect example of why youth doesn't really succeed in the playoffs. Because they're not used to it. They're not used to how things operate. They're not used to that intensity. There is a much different level of intensity from a playoff series, playoff game to a regular season game. I know that sounds obvious, but people don't really understand it until they're in it. Now, yes, I know people are going to look at me, Jay, what? You never played NBA? I know. I did play college basketball, and we did make it to a championship. So I know that, at least on that level, I know the level of intensity. There's just a different feeling. There's a different feeling knowing that. I know college is different than NBA, but knowing that this one mistake can ruin your season. And obviously that gets magnified in the NBA because you're playing the best of the best. And you see a lot of teams. And it's also A lot of young teams don't know how to close in the playoffs. That's one reason. That's something I'm going to talk about with the Timberwolves and Nuggets and why I know I predicted the Nuggets were going to win that series, and I'm not going to falter my pick, or I'm not going to get off of my pick, but I'm going to explain to you guys why my pick may be wrong. But young teams don't really know how to finish in the playoffs. They don't really know how to finish games. They don't understand the importance. They don't understand the magnitude. Or sometimes they get swallowed by by the let's say, pressure of the moment. I wholeheartedly believe that the Magic was the better team in that series. What I think happened, though, is the person, the team that has been there before and that understands that level of intensity and understands how important these moments are, shined above the rest, and that was Donovan Mitchell. I think game six, Donovan Mitchell scored every single fourth quarter point for the Cavaliers. In fact, Donovan Mitchell, outside of maybe one or two games, was the only Cavalier that didn't struggle mightily. Darius Garland struggled. Evan Mobley struggled. Allen, he was out with injury. Almost every single player outside of Donovan Mitchell for the Cavaliers struggled. Donovan Mitchell probably has the most out of the players that play on a regular basis. He has the most playoff experience, whether we talk about his time in Utah and we talk about his time in Cleveland. So it's not lost on me that he was by far the best player in this series as far as the consistency. I mean, I know they lost, but he had a 50 bird. And it's also not lost on me that every single game outside of a few of them, the Magic suffered long droughts of non-scoring. You see that a lot with young teams. A lot of young teams think that this three-pointer is going to turn into a 15-pointer or is going to turn into a 10-pointer. Instead of chipping away, they try to play hero ball because they feel the pressure of being down. Donovan Mitchell was the best player. The second best player was Paolo Banchero. And I feel better about the Magic because this experience is going to help them in the future. It's going to help Franz Wagner, who had a terrible game 7. It's going to help Jalen Suggs. This is going to help Jonathan Isaac. This is going to help such a young team. Markel Fultz. And as much as the Magic struggled offensively, so did the Cavaliers. The difference is the Cavaliers have that veteran that's been there, which is Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell was, especially when you talk about probably game 5 on, Donovan Mitchell was the deciding factor in why the Cavaliers are now playing the Celtics, who, by the way, I don't think they have a shot in hell to beat the Celtics. So, but yeah, that series did show me that Darius Garland, bro, he is a good player, but he has, this is the second probably playoff run where he has struggled mightily. I don't know if it's because he's a smaller guard and you're going against, I mean, the Magic is a big team. And I think that the Magic probably, especially if Porzingis is to miss a few games, I do think that the Magic were probably a better, because of their size, I think they were a better matchup for the Celtics. But Darius Garland, bro, I don't know how he's going to fare against a Jaylen Brown or even a Derek White, who has been great. Because don't get it twisted, as much as Donovan Mitchell kind of carried them to this series win against the Magic, they're going to need all hands on deck against the Celtics. Because the Celtics have been the best team all season. And while, yes, every team can go through scoring droughts, yo, the Magic, it felt like the Cavaliers went through scoring droughts every single game. Even games that they blew out the Magic, they would go 5, 6, 7 minutes without a score. And that's kind of what did the Magic in Game 7. The Magic were up 19 points. And I think they didn't score for 6 minutes. Do you know how long 6 in-game minutes is? And while they're not scoring, Donovan Mitchell and the Magic just keep, and the Cavaliers just keep chipping away till you look up. And what was a 19-point lead is now a 5-point lead. Here's my evaluation on leads, lost leads. It's such a psychological thing that a lot of teams, both professional and non-professional, are not prepared for. I understand there, whether you can say it or not, and coaches try to coach against it, but it happens. I'll take you guys behind the curtain a little bit. There is a level of comfort that you get when you look up and you're up 19, you're up double digit, you're up 20 points. There is a level of lax. There's a level of laid backness that you get when you look up and you see that you're up in the third, by the way, and you see that you're up 19 points. And it's just like, okay, so you start to play a little lackadaisical. You see, 'cause you're just like, it is what it is. We won. That's probably the scariest point for a team that hasn't quit and a team that is up 19, because the team that hasn't quit, they're going to start putting things in high gear, i.e. the Cavaliers. Perfect example. The Clippers were up like 30 points against the Mavericks. Then they just start playing lackadaisical. They start turning the ball over. They start, you know, doing lazy passes. Yo, the Mavericks hawked them down and took the lead. Now, yes, the Mavericks eventually lost that game, but that's how you can lose a 30-point lead. And what I'm saying is, once you see a 30-point lead, which is why I give all the credit in the world for that game to the Clippers, because once you see a 30-point lead, when you go back to the Magic in Cleveland, once you see a 19-point lead, get down to 3, get down to 2, I think you lost. Because not only do you not have momentum anymore, the momentum is completely swung to the opposite team. But it's very hard to get back up, to get your stamina back up. It's very hard to get your emotions back up, because at that point, it's a new game and you're already tired. You're already confused. Like, what the hell just happened? Well, when you're a younger team, which goes back to my original point with the Magic and Cavaliers, when you're a younger team, there's a lot of times you can't recover from that. Most of the time, you can't recover from that. We saw that last year in the 7-game series against the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. Sacramento was the better team. They were just young, so they didn't understand the experience. In Game 7, they were up big, but you see number 30 over there getting 50 points. Like, oh, okay, hold on. Remember, I think the Magic were up like 10, 15 points and ended up losing by almost 20. I know I haven't really given much positivity to the Cleveland Cavaliers and to the Magic. And honestly, again, I feel better about the Magic after this series, because again, this was the first time, especially players that get big minutes, this was the first time that most of them were in the playoffs, like Paolo, like Jalen Suggs, like Markel. And while of course they didn't play as great as they would hoped, they played really well. And I think moving forward, they're going to be a great team. They're a huge team. Pause. So you get Franz, he gets a little better offensively. Markel gets a little better offensively. Jalen Suggs gets a little better offensively. Paolo gets a little better offensively, even though he had an incredible game in Game 7. I think he had like 38, 39 points. They're going to be good. What I don't like and what I don't have much confidence with when we talk about the Cavaliers is the Cavaliers have been here before. Most of this team that are playing played last year. Now, yes, they lost last year, but you would hope that they they looked most of this. I understand that Jared Allen didn't play a couple of those games, but they looked as bad last year when they lost to the Knicks. Then they did. In fact, the only reason why I think that they lost this series is because they played an inexperienced team, which is why I was just, even though I'm not someone that wants to see Boston succeed as much, I was laughing when I heard the fans say, "We won Boston." No, you don't. Boston is going to embarrass this team. Because it just didn't seem like they grew from last year when they lost to the Knicks in the playoffs. But I don't know, man. We'll see. Shouts out to the Cavaliers for beating the Magic in a 7-game series. So let's move forward. Now we're going to talk about a couple games that happened in the second round that, you know, we'll see. Yeah. Let me put this into its proper perspective. Minnesota is currently up 2-0 against the Nuggets. And both of those games that they won was in Denver. Meaning that Denver has to now win 4 out of the next, 5? 2 of them, or in Minnesota, you completely lost home court advantage. Let me tell you why we're here. And let me tell you what the disadvantage was for the Denver Nuggets playing the Lakers in round one. Do you wonder why the Denver Nuggets look so much different playing the Timberwolves compared to playing the Lakers? It has nothing to do with the Denver Nuggets. It has everything to do with their opponent. And a lot of media personalities were saying that the Lakers want the Denver Nuggets round one because, you know, you get them early, they're not hot, you know, they're not on a roll, which I didn't agree with at all. Obviously, as we sit here, the Denver Nuggets beat them 4-1. But just like we talk about habits in the regular season, you kind of develop habits series by series in the playoffs. And I'm not disrespecting the Nuggets because obviously they're reigning champions. But I think beating the Lakers gave the Nuggets a false sense of teams to expect or things to expect in this year's playoffs. You see, you're playing a team now that knows, that has go-to score, that has no problem scoring. Compared to the Lakers that had a huge problem scoring the ball outside of LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You're playing against a team that knows how to finish games. You're playing against a team that knows how to seize crunch time. Compared to a team in the Lakers that struggled mightily doing that outside of LeBron James and Anthony Davis. There's no coincidence that the Timberwolves, when you look at the Timberwolves and the Nuggets just look old and they look bad against the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves are one of the best, actually, the Timberwolves are the best team in defense. And what in God's name am I saying? The Timberwolves are the best defensive team in basketball. And on top of that, they have scores. They have players that can put the team on their back offensively and said, let's go. Multiple. I mean, people talk about Karl Anthony Towns, right? People forget, Karl Anthony Towns had like a 63-point game this year. As much love as Anthony Edwards is getting, and much deserved love, Karl Anthony Towns ain't no scrub. Mike Conley, I know he's older in age. He's not. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the league. Again, I'm not going to disrespect the reigning champs. When you have the best player in basketball in Nikola Jokic, who is more than likely going to win the MVP, even though I don't think he deserved it this year, but hey. And when you still have pretty much the entire core that won you a championship just a year ago, I'm not going to disrespect them. I think that they can ultimately, by the time we look up or by the time we talk again, they could be at least down 2-1, or they could win 2 in Minnesota. I don't know. But this Minnesota team feels different. Anthony Edwards is here. He's not arriving. He has arrived. Jaden McDaniels is one of the best defenders in basketball, on-ball defenders. He's in that Jrue Holiday class. And I think that was the biggest, and I'm not disrespecting the Nuggets, but I think that was the biggest disadvantage from playing the Lakers, because the Lakers didn't really prepare you. And this is going to sound like all disrespect to the Lakers, and they've earned this, at least this year. The Lakers haven't prepared you for – the Lakers aren't a good team. I've said that for a while. The Lakers are not a good team. They have LeBron. They have Anthony Davis. Yes, D'Angelo Russell can hit a couple shots sometime. Austin Reaves is cool, but they're not a good team. The Timberwolves is probably one of the best, if not the best, cohesive team right now. Mind you, they destroyed the Nuggets game two. And Rudy Gobert, as much as you hate him or not, or like him, hate him, I don't know your feelings, but he is one of the best rim protectors in basketball, if not the best rim protector outside of Victor Wembanyama. He didn't even play. So, I think that this is, you're obviously seeing, I wouldn't be shocked. Now, again, I'm still going to go down with the ship because I had the Denver Nuggets winning, obviously, but I wouldn't be shocked if I looked up. I will say this. Out of all the teams in the West, who, out of every single team that has played in these playoffs in the West, the peak has been highest. The team that looked the best when they're playing the best have been the Minnesota Timberwolves. And a lot of that is because of their young stars in Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns. Remember, Karl Anthony Towns had a torn meniscus, bro. He had the same injury pretty much that Joel Embiid had. But this Timberwolves team is good. And again, we could be telling a different tale a week from now if the Nuggets get their act. Oh, you know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about the whole Jamal Murray thing. And what I think should happen. So for people that don't know, or people that didn't watch game two, Jamal Murray, and there was really nothing going right for the Nuggets at all. And Jamal Murray had probably one of his worst games as a pro. I think he went like 1 for 12 or 2 for like 13 or something. And this happened twice. Kind of like with the whole Patrick Beverley thing to a lesser extent. He throws a towel out of frustration. He throws a towel at the ref. It hit the ref's feet. Nothing was called. Gets it back. The man then throws a heating pad onto the court while the game is being played. Somebody could have stepped on it, rolled an ankle, broke an ankle. Something, you know, catastrophic could happen. Didn't. Moments like this, just like moments like what happened with Patrick Beverley and the fan, precedents need to be set. This, you can't. I'm not saying that you have to be, you know, no one was hurt, obviously. And we understand that it was out of frustration. So I don't think that it should be an egregious suspension or anything. But you can't let this happen and not do anything. I think at least a one-game suspension. Not at least. I think a one-game suspension and probably a fine should be okay, should suffice. But you can't not suspend him. You can't not do anything because then you're setting an ugly precedent. To now, anyone can say, well, I threw it on the court because I was frustrated, but you didn't do anything to Jamal Murray. So why would I get suspended? You see, that's why I think the league is going to come down hard on Patrick Beverley. The league is already petrified after what happened years ago with Malice in the Palace and the players and fans, and we know. So as much as, you know, as much as the venom and the frustration that happened to Malice in the Palace was not what happened with Patrick Beverley and the fan, they are going to come down hard because that's one, they do not want player fan interaction like that. And while I think they're going to come down severely on Patrick Beverley, not only that, and you know, on top of that, what happened with the ESPN reporter that happened to be a woman. This Jamal Murray thing, they are going to set a, they're going to draw a line and say, yo, this is what we're not accepting. They have to, because trust me, if they do not, and I promise you this is going to happen, if they do not, this will happen again. And the excuse that we're going to hear is, why didn't you do anything, or why didn't you suspend Jamal Murray? So I don't think Jamal Murray's a bad dude. I don't think he had any malice. I just think he was frustrated. We've all been upset. I've said things out of frustration that I may not have, well, that I probably shouldn't have said. I've done things. Everyone's done things, you know. So I don't think he's a terrible person, but I do think that with every decision comes consequences. And I do think that a suspension and probably a fine. Because again, I understand maybe it happened for one time and he said, yeah, it just slipped out of my hand. This man, he threw a towel, then he threw a heating pad. This don't happen twice. So, yeah. Oh, and last thing I want to say about this series. That is the Timberwolves Nuggets series. Game two was probably the most physical game I've seen in a while, as far as, you know, with the new age NBA and how they're calling games. Game two was extremely physical. That benefits the Timberwolves, which is why you saw such a lopsided win in game two. If that is how they're going to call this series, they're going to let them play. They're going to let them be physical. More than likely, the better defensive team wins because you're able to do a lot more. Game two, for a lesser extent, kind of felt like this was the older, you know, old days in the NBA as far as how physical they were allowed to be. And that definitely benefits the Minnesota Timberwolves. I will say this. While I still have confidence in the Nuggets because I've seen it, and that was my pick, I know that they can win four straight, obviously. My confidence, let me say it like this. If Jamal Murray is suspended game three, which I wholeheartedly think he will be, you're already playing away. You're playing in Minnesota in game three without Jamal Murray, who has saved Denver a good number of times in this playoffs. I mean, he has two game winners against the Lakers. If you're playing away with no Jamal Murray and they allow the physicality in Minnesota it's going to be hard for me to look at this series, or I'll be kind of surprised if this series isn't either done in four or on the verge of being done in game four. I'm going to go down with the ship. I do think that Minnesota is in a, not Minnesota. I do think that Denver is in a world of trouble in game three, especially if, which I wholeheartedly think is going to happen, especially if Jamal Murray is not playing. And they allow the physicality in game three match the physicality in game two. It's going to be tough for Denver. Let's move forward. The question that I got, and the question that I keep getting is, did basketball fans, did the NBA know that Jalen Brunson was this good? What I think people kind of forget is opportunity is different for different people and in different situations. Now, when I say this, I'm not saying that everybody is on the same level as, you know, superstars. But Jalen Brunson's name has been the topic of conversation, and rightfully so, these last few days. I mean, he's had four straight 40-plus point games. The Knicks ultimately beat Joel Embiid and the 76ers, and as we currently speak, they are one game up against the Pacers in round two. And Jalen Brunson, because people forget, the first game or two in the Philadelphia series, Jalen Brunson was terrible. He was having a historically bad series, and I think the first two games. And then he turned it on. Because while I think he's had four straight 40 or more plus games, I think like the fifth or sixth game was like a 30-point game. So to answer a lot of people's question, no, I don't think Jalen Brunson, I don't think people knew he was this good. And honestly, I don't think Jalen Brunson was this good when he was playing for Dallas. What I think happened was there are sometimes negatives with playing with some stars. That's no offense to those stars, but when you're playing with a ball dominant star, and don't get me wrong, when people say that and when people hear people say, oh, he's a ball dominant, it's always a negative connotation. And in this conversation, especially talking about Jalen Brunson, I see it could be. But it's also truth in when to be as good as Luka is, you need the ball in his hands. Luka is one of the greatest offensive weapons, at least to this point of his career, that we've seen in the NBA. When you look at every single great offensive weapon that we've ever seen, there is a level of ball dominance, as much as, you know, Steph Curry is up there at times. Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, rest in peace. Kyrie Irving, LeBron James. There is a level of ball dominance with them because they thrive with the ball in the hands. And on top of that, usually they're the best option. Like there's a famous quote, man. Allen Iverson, they asked him, yo, why do you take as many shots as you do? You have kind of developed the name or the moniker of a ball hog. And he so eloquently said, well, if I pass the ball and they pass the ball to somebody else and they pass the ball to somebody else and then they pass the ball back to me and there's 3 or 4 seconds left on the clock, what do you expect me to do? Do you expect me to shoot the ball? Do you expect me to pass someone that isn't me? And I know I am the best offensive player that we have. So I do want to dispel the notion that just because now there are times when, you know, players that are ball dominant need to get off the ball at times. And some players struggle with that. That's why a lot of people credit the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry, because he was able to reduce his game a little bit and the amount of, you know, the amount of touches that he gets for a Kevin Durant, for a Klay Thompson. But going back to Jalen Brunson, as we see, Jalen Brunson thrives with the ball in his hand. He has turned into one of those players. And he is by far the best player on New York. I don't think if he would have went to New... I think if he would have went anywhere else, I don't know if it would have worked. And I do think being with his dad, who was on the coaching staff, definitely helps. And I also think that he, as much as it sucks, I think not having Julius Randle on the court also helps, because we know how ball dominant Julius Randle can be, and rightfully so. I mean, Julius Randle is a good player. But I think it has been as much as I don't wish any injury upon anyone, and I'm not like cheering, jumping for joy that Julius Randle has a injury history, but it is a perfect string of events happened to get Jalen Brunson here, as much as, you know, the whole Dallas situation with his contract didn't work out. Then you go to New York where your dad is. And you have probably, even though he doesn't like to rest anyone, you probably have the perfect coach for yourself in Tom Thibodeau. Then you have Julius Randle injuries, which allows you to pretty much play a solo star role and allow you to develop your game and allow you to develop being that number one option, because you have not been a number one option. Probably, in fact, last time Jalen Brunson was a number one option was in Villanova. So with Julius Randle being out and you having the Knicks to yourself, pretty much, you're developing that number one option mentality and number one option skill set. And then you also are, you get Josh Hart, you get Dante DiVincenzo. It was a perfect storm that got Jalen Brunson to where he is right now. And I know Gilbert Arenas' podcast was talking about it. I know First Take was talking about it. I know Get Up was talking about it. I know Colin Cowherd was talking about it. So I'm going to talk about it here. The question is Jalen Brunson a superstar? And obviously, that's a subjective question. And obviously, the reason why it's subjective is because of the definition of superstar is different for everyone. Here's my definition of what a superstar is. A superstar is a player that is viewed as somebody that can not only change the fortunes of a team, but can bring you from one category to another. And what I mean by that is, when you look at a, there aren't too many superstars in the league. There are several really good players, but there aren't too many superstars. In my opinion, a superstar, if you have a superstar on your team, you have, I think you're looked at as a team that could compete for a championship. Which is why a lot of people have yet to give up on the Golden State. Hell, and I'm one of those people, so I'm not just going to single anybody out. I haven't given up on Golden State yet because they have a superstar in Steph Curry. This is why a lot of people have not given up on the Lakers because they have a superstar in LeBron James. Kevin Durant is a superstar. Giannis is a superstar. Nikola Jokic is a superstar. Which I talked about this last episode, which is why his legacy is taking such a hit. But Joel Embiid is a superstar. Luka Doncic is a superstar. These players are supremely talented. And you think that if you have a good shot of not, I'm not going to necessarily say win a championship, but make a deep playoff run because you have these players. And when you look at how Jalen Brunson's been playing in these playoffs, even if you look back last season when he played the Cavaliers in the playoffs, and you look at the duration of how this season went, I think Jalen Brunson, if he's not a superstar, he's as close to one as you're going to get. But I would say he's a superstar. Because I look at this Knicks team, as much as hard as they play, as good as Josh Hart's been for this team, as good as Dante DiVincenzo's been for this team, as good as Mitchell Robinson when healthy has been for this team, as good as McBride has been for this team, as good as all these players have been. I look at this Knicks team and there's no way they would be let alone the second round. They wouldn't be in the playoffs if it wasn't for the play of Jalen Brunson. And on top of that, they wouldn't be in the playoffs. They wouldn't have seen the second round, and they wouldn't be up 1-0 if it wasn't for Jalen Brunson. I'm not saying that superstars aren't flawless. I mean, hell, most of the superstars I just named are not playing anymore, i.e. Kevin Durant, LeBron, Giannis. But I do think that Jalen Brunson has earned his way into that superstar class. And I think I think the hard, and I may have this conversation probably sometime later, But I think the hardest person to... We'll talk about that. We'll talk about it in a later episode. I think the Knicks are going to win the series against the Pacers. I think what hurts the Pacers is kind of the same thing that hurt the Nuggets. You played a team in the Bucks that weren't fully healthy, and now you're playing against a team outside, even though they don't have Julius Randle, you're playing against a playoff team. And I don't think the Bucks are a playoff team without Giannis, and definitely not without Dame as well. So now you're seeing, this is a playoff team. So a lot of the things that you are allowed to get away with, you aren't. And I could go in depth about the whole calls that were at the end of the games. I do think they were bad calls that went against the Pacers, whether that was the kickball that clearly wasn't a kickball or a moving screen that is tough. Some people say he was moving. Some people say he wasn't. I just think it was a tough call, especially at that time. But I am always under the impression, and I'm always going to live by, if the reason why you lost is because of a ref call, that means that you did not put yourself in the best position to win. So, but yeah, the Knicks are being led by a superstar right now, and that is Jalen Brunson. I could be wrong. Some people can say he's a superstar. Some people can say he's not. It's up to y'all. But for me, when I think about superstars, I think about if you're the best player on the team, are you a championship caliber team? Are you a deep playoff run caliber team? And Jalen Brunson, at least this year, has played himself into that category. Yeah, man. Lastly, before we go, Kendrick won. I'm not even going to elaborate. Kendrick won. Yeah. Since last time we talked, Kendrick dropped Not Like Us, which is being played everywhere. Drake dropped The Heart Part 6. He was rapping on that joint, but it was good. It just wasn't enough to overcome the seismic lead that I think Kendrick has built. I don't know if Kendrick's going to drop again, but it was fun. As a spectator, as I don't have a dog in this race, I do enjoy both of their music. It was fun. It was a fun week. Be it Kendrick won. And there you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want a Popular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve, joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to reach as many subscribers as possible, and I appreciate everyone that continues to support me. If you like the content, if you like what I put out, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. To subscribe, it definitely means a lot. Also, I understand that some people just listen to me on DSP, some people just watch me on YouTube. So all the DSP listeners, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, please follow or please subscribe. It definitely means a lot. No supporter is bigger than the other. No platform is more important. So if you do just listen to me on DSP, please subscribe. It means so much to me that you guys care enough to hear my voice, you know. Also, please follow the socials. Follow Instagram. Follow TikTok. I post pretty much daily there, whether that's reels, whether that's stories, whether that's just posts. I post pretty much daily. And that's probably the quickest way on social media, whether that's TikTok or Instagram. That's probably the quickest way to contact me, debate me, tell me how much you love my content, tell me how much you hate it. That's probably the quickest place. And more 9 times out of 10, I'll probably respond, depending on, you know, who you are, depending on, just keep it respectful. I don't mind you disagreeing with me. Just keep it respectful, and I have no problem going back and forth. You know, it's fun. It means, to me, It means you care enough to tell me how you feel, and it means that you were listening. So I appreciate you. Until next time, much love.